Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And it is summertime, and boy, oh boy, at summertime, I get all these wonderful books that they say are for summertime, and then I get a book that actually says The Summer List. And I was so happy to get this book because I really, really enjoy it. And the author is, I can't believe it's her first book, Amy Mason Doan. Did I pronounce it right, Amy?
Yep, that's right. Thanks, Patsy. I'm so happy to be here.
Wow. You know, when we say we're going to have a summer book, that's nice that you put the word summer in in it, right? Perfect.
Yes, and it's such a summery cover, too.
Oh, it is. It's a beautiful cover. Really, they did a lovely job with it. Embossed gold and everything. And I thought, ooh, I love it.
Thank you.
Yes, and it certainly conjures up that feeling of summertime at a lake. And since I spent all of my childhood as summertime at the lake, it really got to me. I really got right into the book, and I enjoyed it so much because it brought back a lot of memories for me, too, because, wow, you are really an amazing writer. You are able to capture a feeling and capture a place and just, you know, pull the reader into it.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. The setting is part of my childhood, too. I grew up in Northern California, so the town in the Summer List is fictional, but it's kind of loosely based on the lakes around Lake Tahoe and Pinecrest, which are just beautiful. I spent a lot of time there growing up.
And, of course, I'm from northern Michigan, but we have the same type of thing. We have these beautiful lakes, wonderful, wonderful pine trees. And we used to have this hammock that was strung between two trees. And I spent my summer, I spent most of my summers in that hammock reading like crazy.
That sounds so nice right now. you know, I'm a little busy you know, with the book launching today, but I have a stack of books that I'd love to read, and I would love to just hide in a hammock by a lake and read.
Oh, that's
Maybe I'll be able to do that later this summer.
You have to say, we always have to take some of that special time. And I know that, like, I was a great reader as a child, so were you.
Yep, definitely.
I love that one of your fond memories was going to book sales at the library.
Yeah, I used to visit my grandmother and my grandfather, and down the street from their house in San Mateo, California, they had a branch library. And back then, this is in the 80s, you could bring a couple dollars and they'd have a used book sale, you know, as a fundraiser for the library. And my grandma would send me with a grocery bag and little money, and I would walk over and just fill my bag with books and then, like, sit under this great bay tree in her neighborhood and read. I think, like most writers, I was a voracious reader growing up.
It was such a wonderful way for us to spend our summers without cell phones. We were lucky.
I know. And, well, I have a 12-year-old daughter, and luckily she is also a voracious reader. And, you know, I just love to see her reading both new books and then also the ones that I slip her that I grew up with. I always, you know, kind of stick them in a room, you know, Betsy Tasty and all those wonderful books that I read as a child. And it's really nice to see her doing that in the summer. And she does the summer reading program at the library as well. So it's great to see those traditions continue.
And when, you know, I tried that. Now, I've always gone to library sales. Wherever I go, wherever I've lived or traveled, I always check out if there's a sale at the library. One time I went to Cape Cod, and they have a beautiful little library there. They were having a sale. My son was little, so we were traveling with this big suitcase full of diapers and disposable things, right? And so I went to the library sale. And so on the way back, of course, all the diapers were gone, and I had replaced everything in the suitcase with books from the library without telling my husband. And he went and grabbed for that suitcase thinking it was empty, and
a little bit heavier,
you know, because they have the good readers up there in Cape Cod, and I found all these books from late 1800s, and I said, okay, that's, you know, I needed that.
So, you
do. Yeah, absolutely. But the worst thing is, one time what I did is, I thought I could really get away with going to a library sale, and I went with my sister Natalie, and we bought so many books that they had to give us one of those big service trolleys. It was stacked. We must have had like 250 books, and so I was planning to do is fill the trunk of my car, and then take them out gradually, a few at a time over months. Unfortunately, the local newspaper was there, and they saw us come. And they took a picture and put it on the front page of the local newspaper.
Oh, really? I would love to see that. Well, no apologies for books.
Never.
You know, I hold on to books because, and I do like e-books as well, and have a Kindle and all that, but I do, there's something about passing an old book on, especially one that you read as a child. So I have a collection that I saved for my daughter, and they're really dog-eared and, you know, some of them are taped up with duct tape and stuff, but, you know, I'll never let those go.
No, they give us joy. And that's why I call this program Joy on Paper, because you get this joy from reading. And I so want people to read, because it is really a very special joy. But then this joy of writing. And I could tell when you know, with this book, you were having a lot of moments of joy there where you came out with really, let's talk about the plot. And it is a story of BFFs, and what happens to that forever in the BFF. And so tell us about the characters, because once we read about these characters, I think Casey and Laura are the two girls, and we'll also mention particularly Casey's mother, Alex. But once we know these characters, we really miss them. So tell us about how you came out with the idea, and about, let's start with Laura.
Sure. Well, Laura is my main character, and it's a first person book, so we're seeing a lot of this through her eyes. She, at the beginning of the book, she's 35 and living in San Francisco, and gets an invitation to come back to her hometown by this little lake, not too far away, but it's somewhere that she has not been in 17 years. And the invitation is from Casey, or so she thinks, who was her best friend all through high school. You know, they were as close as they could have been, but we don't really know why until the end of the book, that they haven't seen each other in almost two decades. They had a mysterious rift at the end of high school, the summer after graduation. And she gets this invitation to come visit and do a scavenger hunt like the one they did as girls. And she knows it's going to be difficult and awkward, but she really wants to reconnect, so she kind of reluctantly goes back and goes along. And then we find out, as the story kind of pivots between the present and then the past when they were in their teens, what they were like as girls and how much the friendship meant to them. And, you know, it meant everything to them growing up. They were very different. Laura grows up in a very conservative household. And then right across the lake is Casey, whose mother, Alex, could not be more different from Laura's mother. So she, you know, she's this free spirit, and she's always getting into these new projects and getting these wild ideas. And she's a young single mother. She almost seems like she could be another teenager. So I love that contrast between who they are as grown women and who they are as teenage girls. And, you know, we get to know them. And I think by the end are really rooting for them to piece together this friendship as we kind of find out how it imploded. And I just, as I was writing it, I really liked the idea of these two women, these two girls across the lake from each other, so different. And, you know, to Laura, Casey's house looks like everything she wants. you know, Alex looks like the mother that she wants, but, you know, is she really? I think that's one of the questions that the book poses, and I did really enjoy writing it. So thank you. I'm glad that was evident.
Oh, absolutely. I as I'm reading, I'm thinking, well, I had a feeling that Laura was sort of based on you, and then
a little bit,
and then now Casey is that. In my case, it's very funny. I had a girlfriend like Casey who was red haired and who had a mother like Alex.
They were red haired also.
They were absolutely.
I love that.
It was absolutely opposite of my family. And yeah. I always remember that my particular friend was always looking at our family. And I remember one of the things she said to me one time, well, your father always kisses you goodbye. And I hadn't thought about that for years until I read this book. And I think that's the wonderful thing about your book is that it does bring back all of these memories of those, you know, teenage years and just sort of, it's just gives you a little bit of a look back into your own life as you're reading this book.
Well, that's great to hear. Yeah, I mean, I remember growing up and going to sleepovers at other houses and just being fascinated by the other household and maybe even doing a little snooping. And it's so interesting as you're growing up and, you know, your family is your whole world. And then you begin to see other worlds, alternative worlds, and maybe they're more appealing and maybe they're not. Maybe just on the surface they are. But I think the visual of Laura looking right across the lake at this ramshackle house where Casey and Alex live and just thinking that her whole life would be perfect if she lived in that house. I think that's really common as we grow up. But they could not be more different. And then as grown women, they're still different. But we see how the split, the rift has affected them. And they kind of navigate this weekend together in different ways. But I think we see the similarity is that they both want to reconnect. And I hope that comes across.
It does. I was reading, I'm thinking, this is the first book. I mean, she's handling this whole situation so deftly. You weave in all these little things that, you know, just fill in the story as we go along. And because we know there is this, it's not a big mystery, you know, but it's a little mystery that keeps us, we want to know what it means, what these different things mean. We want to know why the rift happened. And we want to know some other things as that you weave into the story. And I thought, boy, that was some great writing there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was definitely not easy to weave everything together or to braid it together. You know, I wrote an essay on the craft of writing this book, and I said that at times because there's another storyline that's a little bit mysterious until the end, and then it does all sort of tie together. But, you know, when I was writing it, when I was revising and drafting it, it sometimes seemed as messy as my daughter's braid after a long day running around. You know, it was not neat and tidy. And there was a lot of moving things around to make sure that it made sense and made sure that readers could follow and that it was all flowing nicely. But it was definitely a big task for my first novel. So I'm glad that it worked out, and I'm really happy with how the things tied together at the end.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons you've gotten so many wonderful, you know, blurbs and reviews from people, because it is not just a simple book. You know, there are lots of books out there about two best friends, but by having this additional little story in there and weaving it, as I said, so smoothly and just giving us these little hints along the way, they keep us intrigued. I mean, and that's what you want. You want a book that keeps you turning the pages. And of course, it's a combination of really wanting to know the characters, wanting to understand them. And I think you've done that with Laura and with Casey and Alex, because I was particularly drawn to Alex, much like when I was young, my girlfriend's mother, I found so fascinating because she was so unusual. She was sort of a wild child herself. And I, And my mother, of course, was, you know, a very, you know, housewifey kind of mother. And so I thought the way you did this was really, really cool. I'm going to use some nice 80s language. Cool.
Thank you. No, I love that. I will take cool any day, and I appreciate that. And I love these characters, too. I mean, they definitely feel like real people at this point, and people that I would want to spend time with, because, you know, I did spend a lot of time with them, a lot of hours getting into their heads and thinking about what they would do and everything, how they would sound, what they would look like, obviously, and how they would interact, and even what their voices sound like, all of that. So they're real to me. And, you know, I hope they'll be real to readers as well.
Well, I think you've accomplished it. And as I said, for a first book, it's a major accomplishment. And, of course, let's tell a little bit about, now you, of course, your writing is solid. One of the things that I get a lot of books. And so I always, I sort of take a sigh of relief when I'm reading a writer whose work is solid, but that comes from being a journalist. So you know
I was a journalist for decades before turning to fiction. So that's good to hear. And, you know, I'm definitely, I think that is good training for fiction. It's not everything, but I think in terms of clarity and trying to write something in a vivid way, it certainly helps.
It certainly does, and especially this idea of clarity, because sometimes, you know, I will get a book and the story's great and the author really has a feel for the characters and everything, but there's something missing in the actual, you know, writing is a craft and you really have to learn the basics, and journalism is like that's a skeleton, and then everything else you flesh out.
Yes, definitely. And I think I'll always have a more approachable kind of writing style. You know, some of the writers I really admire have an extremely lyrical style. And, you know, there might be moments of that in my book, but that's not really what I do. But I think that conversational, direct style comes from working at newspapers and magazines for a long, long time. And you know, I still, one problem is I still follow AP style, so I don't use an Oxford comma, and I've had to train myself to put that in there. I know it's a heated debate, and I finally did get to a point where I would put that in there. But those are little ways that a journalism background isn't as helpful when you're writing fiction. But 90% of the time it is.
Well, and being comfortable with language, so
yes.
It makes it easier, but you know it took you quite a while before you decided to write that novel. If, you know, all journalists think they have a novel in them. Not all of them do. I've had a few journalists who have sent me books, and I would say stick to journalism. You know? But
I mean, I think that's true. I think every reporter I've ever known has kind of wanted to write a book, whether nonfiction.
The great American novel.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's wonderful. And I, you know, I didn't do it until after I turned 40, which is quite a long time, because I always wanted to, ever since I was a child, you know, getting those books, sitting under the bay tree reading. I always thought, wow, I'd love to do this. But I never really seriously considered it. I never thought I could. I didn't know any authors. It just seemed highly impractical.
So you never thought you would be compared to Judy Blume?
No. Oh my gosh. No. And
isn't that something?
High praise. That makes me, I mean, I got teary when I saw that, because I love her so much and her work, and such a big part of my life. But no, I really did not. And I do think turning 40 is a powerful thing. You know, you realize you don't have forever, and I think I got to that point of thinking, well, what do I have to lose? I mean, I really need to try this and sit down and do it, and I'm so happy I did. Because it is scary to write a book. It's scary to face an empty page, and and to do that for a year or more is really terrifying, you know, because there's no guarantee that anybody will read it or that it'll even be any good.
Because at that point, you're on your own. You don't have a big newspaper or magazine behind you, so you have to do it. But you did it, and you wrote the summer list, which I think is just terrific. And I want to talk to you about how you used – I always love books that have music in them. And so I want to talk to you about that. I'd love to talk to you a little bit about your agents and how you got the first book, because it's always the first book is always the most difficult. I have to take a commercial, but I'm going to play a little music on the way out, which you'll recognize. And as we play it, then when we come back, we're going to talk about it, okay?
Sounds good.
So just hold on. Don't hang up, because we have lots and lots to talk about.
Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my very special guest today on the day of the release of her wonderful new book, just in time for summer, and it is called The Summer List. Amy Mason Doan, right? Did I pronounce it right? I always worry, you know, your name is spelled D-O-A-N, and so it's Doan. And
rhymes with phone. No, you got it right.
Okay, because when people should be heading straight to wherever books are sold and asking, we want Amy Mason Doan's new book, because it is, if you're packing up and heading to the beach or heading to the pool, you need your sun lotion, you need something good to drink, and you need to have this book, and it is called The Summer List. So put it on your list. And let's talk. You've done so many wonderful things in this book. You've created wonderful characters, a nice little mystery in there that keeps us turning the pages. And then, as I said earlier, I love when an author talks about music, because for me, I'm a very, I have my, you know, my playlist that I listen to all the time, and I love to associate music with books. So tell us about the music that you included in this book.
Sure, and I loved what you just played.
Oh, isn't that cool? I mean, that
Pearl Jam, Better Man, which I adore, so I had to stop myself from, you know, singing along.
Well, me too, and I there's a line in there that I love, and it's she dreams in color, she dreams in red, can't find a better man. I've always loved that line. I thought that's such a, it's just very evocative. And so I was happy when I saw that song in your book.
Yeah, there's a lot of 90s music in the book. You know, that's kind of my era. I love the music. And I tried to pick songs that I thought Laura and Casey would listen to, especially in the summer. So, and then there's songs in there that are just meaningful because of the lyrics as well. But there's, you know, the Cranberries and Mazzy Star, all the songs. There's a song that's playing when Laura meets JB, the boy she really falls hard for, and then sort of reconnects with as an adult as well, that I've always loved. It's really beautiful. So I just think that's kind of part of the texture of the book. You know, when we listen to music, that's just what we do in our daily lives. So a lot of it is presented just really naturally as they're going about driving around or listening to music at the beach. There's also a playlist for the book that I created, and I had a ball doing that.
Well, I think it's great. I love it. I think this is, I have a feeling this book is going to be picked up by a lot of book clubs. And I think so, because it's a kind of book that ladies who have book clubs enjoy, because it is looking back. As I said, for me, I'm reading it, and suddenly I remember things that I had forgotten. I just love the scavenger hunt idea. I had not thought of a scavenger hunt in years I can't even think when the last time I thought of one. And now all I want is, I want to get a whole bunch of people. I'm going to invite everybody over.
There's so much fun. I love an adult game like that. You know, I think I'm a sucker for anything like that. And I love a scavenger hunt. And I certainly did them as a child. And that's great to hear about book clubs, because I love book clubs. I'm in two book clubs, and I'm going to be visiting with a lot of book clubs this summer. I'm part of this new thing called the Novel Network, it's kind of like a match.com between authors and book clubs, and we can do a free appearance on video chat or even in person. And there's questions in the back of the book for book clubs, and my editor and I worked really hard on those. I think there are 10 or 12 questions for book clubs. There are some spoilers in there, so you don't want to read them till after you've read the book. But I think there are some themes in the summer list that would yield some good discussion based on the book club meetings that I've attended as you know, a participant. So I do hope it resonates with book clubs, and I'm glad to hear you say that.
Well, I think it will. The writing is, as I said, because it's solid writing, it's going to hold up. And sometimes you do get in book clubs where they spend half their time complaining about the author, the bad grammar or the misuse of something, you know, and it drives you crazy, because I love to concentrate on the story. And in your case, that's all people have to concentrate on. So,
yeah, I mean, that's good to hear. Yeah, you don't want any distractions from the story, for sure.
And I think that... as I said, because it is, it's so beautifully written. And I was wondering, how did you find an agent, and how did you find this wonderful? You, as a matter of fact, you have an absolutely terrific agent. Just tell us a little bit.
I do.
I mean, you are very, I don't know, lucky or just blessed or what, because, you know, there are agents in this world, and then there are agents. And
yeah,
wow.
She's brilliant. Well, my agent is Stephanie Lieberman at Janklow and Nesbitt, and I kind of found her the old-fashioned way. 4 years ago, I think it is, maybe almost 4 years. I had another project that was just sort of in a drawer, and then I had this book that I was shaping, and I sent her a query letter. I didn't know her. I didn't know anyone who knew her, but I really liked what she had posted on the agency website about her wish list, and one of the things she was looking for was a strong female protagonist. And as I was sort of making a spreadsheet of the agents I wanted to reach out to, that jumped out at me, and I just kind of knew that we would be a good fit, and it did work out that way. And she's amazing. She's a very editorial agent, and just really, really talented. And I've been so fortunate with this book. You know, my first novel, and everyone, my editor, Melanie Freed at Graydon House, and my agent, and the whole team has just been wonderful. I think I'm being spoiled because it is tough out there in 2018, and I know a lot of writers who have tried to get an agent for decades or, had a not amazing experience getting their books out in the world. It's rough, and it takes a lot of resilience. So I'm just full of gratitude today.
Well, as you said, I mean, you have you got a top agent, and I think for the writers who are listening, I have a combination of listeners. I have readers, people who want to know the story behind the book, want to hear more from the authors, and I get always so many listeners who are so excited when I get authors on who tell, and really just by telling about their characters and how they came out with the idea are intrigued enough to read the book. But I also have a lot of writers, and they, some of them are self-published, and as you said, many are trying to find agents. And so it is good for them to know that, you can go through the query letter phase, and you just have to be persistent. And and sometimes lucky, but you also have to have something, as I say, some solid writing behind you.
You don't want to rush it. I mean, I'm sure this is advice a lot of the writers in the audience have heard. You get so excited when you finish something, and I know this temptation well. You just are so thrilled that you created the book, and people do try to rush it out, and maybe even query agents a little too soon. But take some time and then think about who you want to work with. And just be a little patient. I know it's really hard, but you want that book in top shape before you reach out to agents. And then they're going to rework it too. You think you're done, but you're not. You're going to rework it before it goes out to editors. And then you're going to keep revising it until it shines. It's a long, long, long process. And we're not always that patient these days. We want instant gratification, and that just does not happen to a lot of writers. And in 2018, but if you are patient and strong and brave, it is worth it. And I think writers are brave, really.
Well, you have to be. You have to be. If you're going to finish that book, you have to have you have to have a special, toughness, because it is easy to give up on it. And then it is easy also to give up on trying to get it, trying to go through the query letter. But what you did, and I want to point this out to all of the writers out there, look what Amy did. She noticed what the agent was looking for. It is absolutely pointless to send query letters to an agent who is not interested or not looking for a particular thing, or you never send to just an agency. You have to send it to a specific agent, and you have to do this research, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I'm amazed that writers do that, but I mean, some of them apparently still do just say dear agent, or
oh, they do. I know,
email blast out, and that's just not going to work. And you want to find someone that is going to get you and really fall in love with your work, and that won't be every agent. So target people. You can follow them on Twitter. Agents are really candid about what they're looking for. There's something called manuscript wish list. That's like hashtag MSWL. And you can pull that up and just see what they're looking for and what they like, and look at the books that they have worked on. You know, are they writers that you like, that you think are similar to you? All of that is out there on the internet, and you have to be patient and do a little more work.
And if they say they don't want a zombie book, don't send them a zombie book.
No,
I was talking to one agent, and she said, I have on my webpage, I don't like zombie books. And she said, inevitably, you know, she'll get this whole bunch of zombie books. And she said, why? I can't steal.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to waste anyone's time. You know, you're just starting out at a disadvantage. But, you know, agents are book people. I think that's the thing I've learned. Everyone, editors, publicists, all these amazing people who are working in the industry, they're all book people, you know, just like me and you, and they love reading. They were kids who read. So it is scary, but the more people I get to know, and, you know, most of it is still just on the phone because I'm way out here in Portland, Oregon, and most of my people are in New York. But they really are just book people, and they love books as much as we do, and they're not scary or mean. They're just trying to find books that they know that readers will connect with. And it's good to remember that when things get hard.
Now, although you are a solid journalist and obviously a very talented writer, before you sent your book off to Stephanie, had you had an editor go through it? Had you worked with somebody to make sure that it was in perfect shape?
Not on this book, but, you know, I had done a few workshops. When I decided to do fiction, I did some craft workshops around Portland. You know, Portland is this great writer's town. We have so many places like the Attic Institute and Italia 26 where you can get in a small group. And it's nice to share your work. And I don't have an MFA, but a lot of these workshops are sort of MFA style where everyone reads a few pages or maybe your whole book or your whole short story. And then you kind of sit silently as they tear into your work. and that's so good. I mean, it's just really good to hear some objective critique of your work. But there are definitely good editors out there that you can hire, you know, maybe structural editors who will go over big picture stuff or copy editors. But, you know, hire someone good if you do that. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely turned to fiction and knew that it was different from journalism and I needed to work on it. So luckily Portland is an amazing place for that. And most cities are. You can find a good workshop. Just go online and research them.
And then, of course, when you get somebody like Stephanie Lieberman, who is an editorial type of agent, who actually gets, you know, right into it, gets her hands into it, this is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, she really had some amazing advice as I was revising. And, you know, there were a lot of, because we have three storylines, like that really wasn't in its current form when I went to her with this book. And we really worked on, oh, goodness, probably for 6 months before it went out to editors. So it's important. And again, patience is everything. It'll pay off in the end.
Exactly, because I get, you know, I get authors who, you know, they finish their book and they're ready to send it off, even before they have, you know, edited at all, and then they think that's how it's going to go. Like every word is precious. Every word is that's the way I want it, and I say, no, I don't think so. You know, there are going to be changes. It's once it's out of your hands, and there are, you know, you have to be willing. And agents are looking for people who are willing to work with them and not, you know, be sort of hard nosed about it. That, you know, they want it one particular way.
Exactly. Yeah, it's always good to take a little break, set it aside, put it in a drawer. Take a few weeks off or longer if you have it, and then read it again. Read it all the way through or read it aloud. And it's amazing what you'll see. I have little tricks like that. Or change the font of the book. That's another favorite. And that might not work for everyone, but I do that once in a while. Change the font, and then it looks like a new book, and I can see things that
It absolutely works. I think that's one of the best pieces of advice. It's amazing. Our eyes become accustomed to a particular font, and we don't notice those mistakes. But the minute you change it into, you know, New Times Roman or something, you suddenly you say, "My goodness, I have so many typos in here."
It's so true. Or and reading aloud, you'll kind of hear where things catch or where things don't quite sound natural. But then when you do send it in to agents, always use Times New Roman 12.
Yes,
don't
always
use any goofy font. I don't want to get anyone in trouble and have them submitting books and, you know, Wingdings or something like that. You never want to do that.
Yeah, Comic Sans. That's a good one.
Yes.
That's the one I always write people notes in. I like that one. So yeah, please. But you know, it's looking at this and thinking that it is a first book. I was thinking, do you use Word?
I start out with a program called Scrivener.
I was going to say, I love Scrivener.
You like it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Scrivener for the beginning when I'm kind of figuring out the structure and sort of storyboarding out the plot and the chapters, because you can move things around so easily. You can just drag and drop a chapter or a scene, and especially with a braided timeline like the Summer List has, that's really helpful. And then I convert it to Word later in the process. But I really recommend Scrivener. I love that.
Well, I think it's wonderful. And the lovely thing about it, you can keep all your notes about a book all in one file. So,
notes and like character profiles. You can put pictures up of what you think characters might look like. I mean, I think it's easy to maybe get carried away with that, and then you kind of think you're writing when you're not.
Yeah.
Some days when the writing isn't going well, you know, it's really fun to like create a Pinterest board of a character, because that's less scary than just forging through the writing. But no, Scrivener has so many functions like that. It's amazing. I don't even know half of what it has available still, because it's got so much you can do.
But one of the things, how can I say? There are, because you're a journalist and you know how words work and sentences work and paragraphs work, I am finding some of the indie writers are getting too dependent on things like Grammarly that change things. And I think that it loses some of its spontaneity when you get too, you know, using programs like that, or you know, just sitting with a program that's going to give you a thesaurus of possible words to use.
I agree. I mean, you don't want to dull your style or your unique voice, you know. And if you use sentence fragments in your writing, and that sounds like you, then stick with it, you know. I agree with you on that.
Yeah, because I really, there's a little bit too much of that, because I'm getting some books where I think it's been run through one of these programs, and all, it takes away the flavor. I'm wondering, like, if we take Jane Austen and we run her books through Grammarly, they'll come back,
man.
And oh my gosh, what are the good?
It would just kill it, I'm sure.
Oh.
Yeah, although I'm curious about what that would sound.
I have a feeling Ernest Hemingway would run his. Can you imagine F. Scott Fitzgerald running his stuff through Grammarly? I don't think so.
Oh man! Well, Hemingway especially, I think, would not have. Yeah, and maybe somebody's done that. I feel like I might have seen an article about this long ago. But yeah, I mean, you don't want to lose what makes your writing unique. You definitely don't want a manuscript that's riddled with errors that makes you look like an amateur. But don't make your work sound like everybody else's.
Exactly. And to have that there, when you're particularly when you're writing dialogue, you want it to sound like the way that you hear it in your head, and not not what some program tells you, you know, to correct this or that, because it doesn't work. And that's why I think your book is so great. Your dialogue. Do you like dialogue better, or which do you like find easier to write, your dialogue or your or the just the narrative part?
I think dialogue comes more easily, so I do like it better. So, yeah, I love writing dialogue, and I think that, you know, it's so great when you really know the characters' voices, and would they say yeah or yes, you know, would they swear, their little verbal tics. But I think I tend to rely on dialogue a little bit too much when I'm drafting, because it does come more easily, and sometimes the just descriptions or opinion part of the book, you know, that's harder work, I think, than just watching the characters interact.
Well, I liked your dialogue. I thought it was really, it captured the characters and kept, you know, you could recognize their dialogue, and I like that. I thought it was really great.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Patsy.
Well, there's so many wonderful things about this book, and it is called The Summer List, and it is by Amy Mason Doan, and the cover is beautiful, and it's on the cover they say, 2 friends, 10 clues, 1 breathtaking secret. Well, I think, you know, the idea of putting that scavenger hunt and using the scavenger hunt, that's what the 10 clues are, was really an absolutely wonderful framework for the book.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I had so much fun coming up with the 10 items. I mean, you know, there are actually 5 things that Laura and Casey have to collect, and then 5 photographs that they have to take. And it did. It provided a structure, because each of the items kind of takes you deeper into their past, their shared past. And, you know, I think we all have those objects that might look like junk to someone else that are just so precious to us. And so that's kind of what I tried to do.
Well, I think now at the book club luncheons, I'm sure now the book club luncheons are going to have little scavenger hunts, and they're going to go around and say, oh, who's got a paperclip in their purse, and who's got a mirror, and who's got, yeah, so we're gonna have little mini scavenger hunts at all the book club luncheons around the country.
That would be fun. Well, I would love to take part in that. I think that sounds like a blast.
Oh, yeah, I think it'll be fun, and it'll be something that when you go around to book clubs, you can moderate the scavenger hunt and do that with all the ladies in the book club. And then they'll love it. They'll love it.
I could be like Alex in the story, kind of the game master of the scavenger hunt.
Exactly. And you are definitely the writing master when it comes to a wonderful, wonderful summer read. And again, everybody, you have a website. Let's tell people about your website, because it's very...
Yeah. So I'm online. I'm everywhere. But amymasondoan.com is my website. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter, and I'd really love to hear from readers. So send me a message. I'd love it.
And she spells her name Doan. And yeah. Exactly. Send Amy a message and read this book. And it is really great. And I'm so, so happy that I got to talk to you today, because it's a special day when your first book is released.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Patsy. I enjoyed it.
Okay, it's been a joy to talk to you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, woo! Yes, and beautiful, beautiful cover. Oh, I love the gold embossing on this cover. It's really nice. So, okay, that was fun. And the book, it's really nice. I need to get a bunch of people together, and we'll have a scavenger hunt. So, now remember, as I always tell you, that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. And by the way, the audible book for this is very, very nice. Excellent narration. And I do love a good audible book. And so this is something that you should all try if you haven't tried an audible book and you're going to the beach and you don't want to take the book along. You can take your phone, which you always have with you, and listen to the audible version. So that's one thing you can do. Again, remember, please, I need you to go to Facebook and like Joy on Paper. It's Radio Joy on Paper. So go to Facebook and like radio Joy on Paper, and that would be really helpful to me. And meanwhile, if you're having guests over this summer, make sure that you have some really good pillows for all of your guests. And go to MyPillow and use my promo code, P-A-T-Z-I. You know, Patsy, some people have asked me, where did I get this name? And one day I'm going to do a whole program about how I got this name and the famous person who gave me this name. So that's going to be fun. And I'm looking forward to, I'm going to have some more poetry, because everybody loved when I played Robert Bly last week. He's a wonderful poet. And as I tell all writers, you should read poetry and you will become a better writer. And I also am going to have some very special poetry from J.S. Lamb. And we're going to have that for 4th of July. So I think that will be on the 5th of July, actually, the day after 4th. But we will have some poetry from J.S. Lamb, and lots of exciting things happening in July, including Daniel Silva. Yes, yes, I'm going to be having Daniel Silva on the program, and that is absolutely fantastic. And I'm so thrilled because, of course, you know, he is such a big best-selling author, but also he's absolutely a delightful person. So I'm looking forward to having him on the program in July. And I have a few other big names coming, and also some agents, because as Amy mentioned, you must look at what an agent wants. And please go to Publishers Weekly and see, go under latest deals, and you will see there the deals that an agent has made. And if you then go to their website and see what kind of books they're looking for, they're actively looking for, you will then have an idea of the type of, you know, whether or not you should query them. Because as Amy said, now she got with one of the best agents in New York City. But that's what you have to do. You have to write to a lot of them, and you never know. But again, you have to have a solid book to present to them. So go to publishersweekly.com. And also, there are a lot of contests coming up, and we're going to talk more about those next on Thursday, actually. What else do I have to say today? I've been really busy reading. I am thanking all of the publishers, HarperCollins, Penguin, Random House. You are so kind and so generous, and you are sending me so many books. I need to get some time in the hammock and read all of these books, because I love to talk to authors, and I love to talk to everybody about their books, because there is a book in all of you, and all you have to do is sit down and start writing, and you never know, someday somebody might turn it into a film. And you'll hear the words cameras, lights, action, and there you'll see your book being made into a film. And that could happen, because I'm going to be talking to Nikki Drayden also in July about her book. And I believe by then she should have a movie deal, which is pretty exciting. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he's always so nice to me. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him, and we're all getting ready, and have a nice day. That's it. Bye-bye now.